Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
My Seven Chakras, episode 372.
The seven chakras, swirling vortices of energy, positioned throughout our body from the base of the spine to the crown of the head. For thousands of years, this ancient wisdom has been passed on from master to disciple. What are the functions of these energy centers? And could these chakras help you unlock your destiny and find your true purpose? Welcome to My Seven Chakras. And now, your host, Aditya Jai Kumar.
What's up, Action Tribe? AJ here, host and founder of My Seven Chakras, mysevenchakras.com, the show where we help you experience more healing, more awakening, and of course, more abundance in all its forms. In today's episode, we talk about some really important and powerful and amazing topics, including yoga, pranayama, travel, healing, living a life of purpose and balance. And so if you're interested in any of these topics or all, then make sure that you listen till the very end, because I've got a special guest that I want to introduce to you, whose name is Mikhail Biker. Mikhail is the founder of the Life Awareness Project, LAP, and he has practiced and studied mind training and meditation since the age of 14 and studied Qigong and yoga since having to recover from a severe car accident that happened in the year 2001. By the powerful methods of Qigong and yoga and the grace of God, he was able to recover from injuries of which medical professionals considered he would probably not heal. And since then, his life is dedicated to helping others learn these wonderful techniques, techniques that will not only give you health, focus, and strength, but also makes us realize what we truly are and what is our calling and what is the essence of life. So, Mikhail, really great to have you on the show. Thanks a lot for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. Beautiful.
Great, great. So we usually start our show with an inspirational quote. So is there a quote that's sort of on your mind right now? And how do you apply it in your day-to-day life?
What I find, especially lately, very, very inspiring is the quote that you cannot drive darkness out of the world by fighting darkness, but by shining light. And I think especially, it's always has been like that. But I think especially now, it's very easy to become a little bit negative and feel you have to resist the things in life and fight against things or a system or a disease or it's I think most importantly for human beings as an individual, what you can do and the power that you have is to start to really shine the light of awareness, consciousness, life, God, however one wants to call it, within, so that you can start to become a positive vibe in your surroundings, for your family, for this whole world, to add something to life instead of just complaining and fighting and this and that, to become a shining spirit, because that's in essence what we all are.
Wonderful. I love that first thought that you shared. We can't fight darkness with darkness. We have to use a different strategy over here because otherwise it's going to be very stressful, very anxiety driving, and not useful. And so what we need to do, like you've alluded to, is use these different practices, these techniques, these ways of thinking that will allow you to illuminate the light that is already within you, but shine it in the right areas so that first you heal and then maybe facilitate the healing of people around you as well as collectively in the world, which is, I think, a good place to begin with. But let's start from the beginning, Mikhail. How did it all begin for you? Like, where did you grow up as a child?
I grew up in the Netherlands, and I was raised in a Christian family, and I got a lot of beautiful values in my life, in my raising as a upbringing, and especially a lot of the teachings of Jesus, that you have to be loving and kind and forgiving, and all these qualities I always found very inspiring. Later on, I went a little bit on my own path, not very much the Christianity, but still I find very beautiful everything that Jesus said, everything spot on. But then I went more on my own path, and I got more, I found it interesting how without theory, how without reading certain stories or a theory about what God is or what life is, without theory, how to experience directly the truth, the essence of this reality. Because a story, it can help, or an idea, but it's with the mind, if you know what I mean. But experiencing it and feeling it is above the mind. You do it with the heart, if you know what I mean. So then I got more into meditation and into in stillness, experiencing life, experiencing God, this universe, this reality, this creation, and finding that reality is a different experience for everybody, but in essence, it can only be experienced and not really be told.
Wonderful. Thanks a lot for sharing. You know, so many things based on what you've shared so far. You have made a differentiation between theory and what you can read in a book versus what you can experience. So the difference between objective knowledge and subjective knowledge, when you bring your own awareness, your own understanding to that experience, which is so profound. We might read the same thing, but a lot of times we might come to a different interpretation based on our own experience, our own mindset, our own lens of living or seeing things in life, which is wonderful, because everyone's feedback or everyone's voice in a way is valuable. So my question is, you know, you mentioned that you were raised in a Christian household, and then somewhere down the line, you sort of went in a new direction. What made you sort of go on that quest? Where were you? What was happening? And then what made you say, you know what, I want to find something more. I want to find something different. How did that happen?
But I think, just starting to question a lot. Like, why? Like for instance, in a lot of things in the Bible, it's taught that you have free choice, but if you make the wrong choice, you go to hell forever and ever, and you won't come out. Or unless you, these kind of things. So then I thought, like, that doesn't really make sense. And there were some more things that I thought, like, that doesn't really make sense. On the one hand, explaining about you have to love one another, and that's the quality of God. But on the other hand, different tribes, it's okay to kill whole tribes that are different and not believing in God, things like that. So then I started to think, like, well, if I find that I don't really agree with these things, what is it that I think myself? So I went to see in different types of religion, even in reading the Quran, even reading Buddhism. But then I found more and more, it's not about the theory. The theory is it can help, like I said, on the path, but the important thing is to start to experience it. And that was through sitting in stillness, in meditation, learning to observe your own mind, instead of having a theory about the reality. What am I actually feeling? What am I actually seeing? Why am I seeing the things as I see? So more into that. And then this was when I was about 14, started getting into these things more. And like you mentioned before, I had a very strong car accident when I was about 18, and then I had a lot of injuries. Some of them, doctors said I would maybe not heal. My right side arm was paralyzed, and these kind of things. And then seeing also that the power of the mind and creating gratitude and thankfulness and flowing with life and accepting what life offers you and gives you. If you learn to flow with it, then you can grow with it. And then I started more and more seeing that layer of the deeper layer of reality that you can connect with. And from then on, this journey kept on going.
It's very fascinating that you went on this quest for experiencing different aspects of what it means to be alive, and then also questioning, you know, the questions that a lot of us ask when we embark on a spiritual path or a spiritual journey. But like you've mentioned, you've been practicing meditation since you were a teenager, right? So how did you discover meditation, that there's a practice like this that exists? Was it like you read a book or somebody told you? You had an interaction. I mean, the initial seed, where was that seed?
Well, of course, you have in Christianity, in traditional Christianity, like if you go way back, this was also prayer was also a form of meditation. I think nowadays prayer is seen as just talking and not listening, if you know what I mean. But learning to in silence listen and observe, getting in connection with meditation in that way for one part. But on the other part, yes, sometimes I would just sit somewhere and then I would just become still and, for instance, look at a tree or clouds or whatever there was, and just thinking, what is actually happening right here, right now? What am I seeing? So yeah, and in a way, meditation is pure observing, is pure consciousness, pure just that observing part of our being. And the more I did that, the more I started to get in connection with that skill, if you want to call it like that, of becoming able to, instead of doing something, thinking something, wanting to change something, just watch what is actually happening and watch life unfold in front and within yourself.
Wonderful. So, thanks, Lord.
Yeah,
as you shared it, I sort of was taken back into my own life, where as a kid, I used to do a lot of daydreaming. And sometimes I was maybe scolded by my teachers as well, but I used to find it very effortless to daydream and look out in the ocean or maybe at the trees and not live life in terms of the reality or the limitations that are around us, but just daydream. And I used to do a lot of sketching also of, you know, these different cartoon characters, of heroes, you know, things like that. But it's such an important practice, right? To just daydream.
Definitely. And like you said, I had the same as you, also always sketching in when I was in the class instead of really listening. I could listen better also to the teacher. I was always, the books were full of sketches and things and flowers or cartoon things. And I think this is a skill that we naturally have, that almost every child has. But unfortunately, and this is something it's also a bit my mission to try to inspire the way we raise children, is to teach that quality more, to help children to see it as a good quality, not like, no, you should listen to the teacher and stop scribbling in your book, or don't daydream, you're just watching outside doing nothing. No, this is a beautiful quality as a human being, because like that, we both learn to create from a deeper level without thinking, without mind, just making scribbles, and like that we can flow also in later parts of life with creating parts of our life. But also learning to observe and just watch, like you did, watch the birds or watch a tree or daydream, just observing it, you know. So this is a great quality that, unfortunately, in the way we teach our children now, is something not seen as a quality, but as a misfunction or something.
Interesting. Now, another thing that I think is common between both of us is the fact that we've both had accidents of some form. So maybe if you could tell us a bit about the accident that you experienced, because I think that's a pivotal moment in your sort of evolution and healing yourself. So maybe if you can take us back to that, the day of the accident, what was happening in your life?
I was in Australia. I was 18 years old. I just turned 18. I wanted to go travel and I waited. My parents didn't let me go when I was 17. So I waited till I was 18, and almost the day I turned 18, I went there. And then I bought a car with two friends, like a really old Chevy car. And we were just flowing every day with the things that came on our path. And it was lovely. And then I wasn't driving myself, and everybody survived, thank God. But we were driving on the wrong side of the road, probably, because I don't really remember anything of it. And we crashed straight into another car with about 60 miles an hour or something, both cars crashing straight into each other. And then I was brought to with the helicopter and to the hospital, and I just woke up and my brother and mother were there. But I remember waking up with the kind of feeling of gratitude, even though if I had things on my body and it was, had my spine was broken onto places, disc. And even though if I couldn't really move, I felt this deep sense of gratefulness to still be alive, to not a moment thinking like, why did it happen to me? Or why this arm is maybe not never going to move good. And I'm very grateful for that. Thank God it all slowly got better and better. But I felt this as a gift to experience life on a deeper level, to feel what it is to almost lose life, and to see the quality and the richness of just being alive, the gratitude.
Right. I think that's a very vulnerable story to share, because obviously that was a hard phase in your life. Like, I myself have gone through a road accident when I was on my motorbike, somewhat in the similar age. I was maybe 18 or 19, but I was on the way to my college. And that was one day when I did not wear my helmet, probably because I was in a hurry or something like that. But at the cross section, there was this car that came from the side, and you know, it was a collision. I went hurling. I remember being in flight. And then the next thing I remember is that I'm in the hospital. My mom is on my side, and I had multiple emotions. So one side, I was like, I don't know what's happened to my body, because how many stitches, what happened, you know, physically to my body. But then on the other side also, I realized that I could have died and this could have completely ended. But for some reason, somewhere out there, something out there decided that it was not my time yet. And in a way, that started on my path of uncovering ways that I could let go of this emotional trauma that might have been collected, because I did not cry. I did not process those emotions. And just like a man, I pretended as if everything was normal. And so what you share is very, I think, important, because a lot of people, through some form of or other, they have gone through traumatic experiences and are looking for ways or practices that will help them heal or let go or process those, you know, tough times. So talk to us about, how did you discover Qigong and yoga? Were they two separate incidences, or did you discover them together at the same place?
No, when I was a bit younger, I think around 16 or something, I had a friend, and when we would go surfing, he did some sun salutations and about 15 or something. And then I got more and more interested in those things, and I got books from the library and these kind of things, and then I started more in a way of just stretching and these kind of things. Like, in the West, a lot is yoga being used just to get flexible and healthy and strong, and then realizing more and more doing it that there was a deeper level to it also, that helps you in every part of life, and meditation practice also. And then I got more into Qigong also. It started kind of when I was traveling a bit in Germany, when I was about 18 or something, or 17. And there were people doing Falun Dafa, Falun Gong. It's a type of Qigong. You're familiar with that. And I started doing that a lot. And I saw very beautiful results in my life, and got very deep into it. And then I started discovering more different types of Qigong as well, and started to implement it more in my life. And it's almost like, as in yoga, like playing a musical instrument. You're never that you say, oh, now I know enough. Now it's always new things to discover, new things to learn. And I keep being in my practice, being inspired, and I keep discovering new levels kind of what you can do with mind and body and energy and consciousness and these kind of things.
It's so beautiful. And it makes me question, the people that come into our lives, are they just random, or is there like a level of synchronicity in all of this where you at some point planted the seed that then manifested? Because Falun Dafa was something that came into my life as well when I was on campus.
Beautiful.
Yeah, at UBC, I was in a point of life where I was looking for something that will help me heal. And I had heard about Qigong some time back and on TV, on YouTube maybe. But in one of the bulletin boards, yeah, there was Falun Dafa, you know, heal yourself, experience oneness. And there was like a workshop that was going to happen the next Friday or something like that. And so I called them, I connected with them. I found the volunteers to be really kind and very nice. And it was simple. So that definitely was pivotal in my own experience of discovering how healing, how wonderful and how beautiful Qigong can be, not just as a practice, but as a philosophy of life as well. So it's interesting. It seems like we've had many similar experiences.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's like a parallel universe. We're living in different bodies, but
the same
experiences. No, for sure. Yeah. But to answer your question about the synchronicity and these kind of things, well, I definitely believe that with your what you pick up out of your reality when you are living in line with what you truly feel is good in life and want in life, you very easily pick up all the things that are in harmony or like almost like a magnet are in harmony with what you feel is the right thing to do. And in that way, all these things seem to come on your path, especially when you're feeling you are living in line with life and you're having a pure heart and an open, joyful being, then everything seems to be flowing. And it feels like if you're feeling you're struggling and the heart is closed and you're having stuck emotions in it, and you're trying this and trying it, but it's not really working. This guy, and this is what I try to teach also, how to clear the heart, how to clear the mind so that you can start to flow with life. Because I definitely believe there are on a very subtle level of this reality that we cannot see, more subtle than mind, more subtle than emotion, more subtle than energy, things that attract and push away each other. And in a way, you are for a great part not only creating how you are experiencing your life, but also what you attract to you on that very subtle, fine level. And you've probably experienced that yourself as well. And I truly believe that this is something you can become very good at, that you can train. And this is on a deeper level, an unseen reality of our human being experience. That's the greatest power that we actually have, that in a way to not only observe, but also create the circumstances and reality. And sometimes you cannot create, and things come on your path that life gives you, like here is some car accident, or here is a this, or here is that. But if you can flow with that, it can help you grow into a more spiritual, a more profound soul.
Wonderful. So what I'm getting is, we're having all these experiences all around us. Where we focus on, or where we throw our awareness, determines the type of opportunities that are presented. Most of the times, the things that keep us blindsided is the fact that maybe the prana is not flowing properly through our body, or there are certain blockages within, not outside. That's not the cause. It's inside. But if you're using these practices that allow our prana and our meridians to allow the energy to flow clearly and properly, then no matter what happens in our life, whether we have that accident, or we have a breakup in a relationship, or we lose an opportunity, we're always making empowering and powerful meanings of the story. And we're telling better stories of the thing that happened in our own life. So I think that's really, really useful for somebody who might be going through a difficult situation right now. And they're wondering, how can I tell a better story out of what has happened, you know, in my own life? So
definitely. I wanted to add something to this. It's like our life, everything you give attention to will grow in a way, right? So if you get stuck in negative thinking or thinking bad about something that happened in the past, or bad about worry about the future, you're creating all these neural pathways in your brain that you constantly fire up. That your brain almost becomes wired of seeing so much negativity. And you can wire your brain and your prana system and your energy system, your nervous system, in a way that you first of all start to experience more the deeper level of life and the beauty that comes to you in life, but also learning to flow with the things that you don't like so much, and seeing that there is there is was some come something out of it that helps you grow if you can flow with it. So if you would see it as a garden, but everything you give attention to, sometimes in life you need fertilizer and excuse my language, but the shit is the fertilizer. I like gardening. It's the fertilizer that you need. I go get horse dung and these kind of things to put in the garden. And so sometimes life gives you some bad experience or shit, but it's to help you grow. If you can flow with it and if you can just let it sink into the earth that you into your life, and then beautiful flowers can grow out of it. But if you keep fighting it and resisting it, you just keep getting it over you. And it doesn't add something to your life.
So I love the imagery over there. And so my question is, as we're talking about the beauty about these practices and the importance of telling the right story based on what you've experienced, you had the accident, right? And for somebody who's new to meditation or yoga, they might say, okay, great, yoga helps me with reducing stress and Qigong does too. But what gave you the confidence to say that yoga and Qigong will help me heal from the accident? Because it was a very serious accident, right? Like your back was sort of damaged in a certain way. What sort of gave you the confidence that, you know, these practices, along with the guidance from God, like you mentioned, will help you heal? So did you consult with somebody, or what was happening over there?
Not really. Maybe you had the same, but I always like to just try things myself. Mm. Try this, try that. So I just started trying things and see, this doesn't work. That doesn't also work. And then maybe one out of five times I felt, hey, something is happening now. I keep that. And I recognize that in some of the practices that I was doing, especially with yoga and Qigong, I felt balance returning, in especially with the nerve damage I had in my arm and back problem. Right. It's rebalancing everything again, getting the strength on a physical level back, but also what signals is your brain sending into your body? Is it sending a signal like, okay, you can heal, you can harmonize, it's so good? Or is it sending a signal, that's that problem there, it's a stupid let's say a back that is always stiff, I don't like it, and then you create more stiffness. So in a way, I got you see all these wonderful images of these rishis in the Himalayas that are in a way very fit, but their eyes are sparking with light, and I saw on a young age these images too, and then I was actually like, hey, something is up with these people. They are doing something very right. And this was when I was about 12 or something, when I saw these images in a book. And I always had this in the back of my mind that they are on a very interesting, good path. And that gave me the confidence maybe also in later age to go with it and to understand that, hey, there's a cure on a deeper level of our being, and not just being dependent on medicine and all these things.
Very true. I mean, when you look at these people and you hear these stories of yogis and Taoists, not only do you see that their skin is glowing in many cases, their eyes are bright, there's a sense of spark that is within them, that is timeless. Many of them live till 110, 120. And most importantly, there's a sense of joy that is within. They don't take life too seriously. They're always laughing and making jokes in a positive way, obviously not making fun of people, but there's a sense of optimism and life within them. And people who are listening to this show, some might be aware of yoga and are learning about Qigong, whereas some people might be aware of Qigong and are now learning about the different aspects of yoga. But what do you find unique about Qigong, and why do you feel it complements a yoga practice so well?
Yoga has many beautiful aspects of it. As most of you will know, it's not just movements, but it's asanas, but it's also meditation and breath work and concentration meditation. But first, I was just focused very much on the asana practice, the opening and the stretching and the postures, these kind of things. And I felt like, I really enjoy this. I like it. But sometimes it's with a little bit of, I wouldn't say force, but a lot of effort. You have to keep a pose for a bit longer period of time and make the breathing calm. Yep. That would be effortful, or a stretch, or staying long periods of time in stretches, which has beautiful benefits, don't get me wrong. In a way, I felt that when I have opened up my body with these asanas of yoga, I felt like it's so nice to now just move without effort. And I felt like, you did Falun Gong. And I felt in Qigong, you can move so effortlessly. It's like you've just been preparing your whole body, opening everything up. And then you can move that body of energy without any effort in a very fluid way. And then making movement itself like a meditation. I feel it really complements each other in that way that... in a way, Qigong is completely effortless. It doesn't cost much power, not much energy, but you flow nicely, opening up gently mind and body.
Absolutely. And I think Qigong brings something new to our society, where the society is conventionally telling you to, you know, hustle and fight against the wave. Qigong is like, hey, you know what? You can do that, but you're going to have a lot of stress and anxiety. What if you learn how the wave is and how powerful the wave is? And then you channel that and move along with the wave, thereby exponentially increasing your power, but at the same time, becoming one with that wave. And, you know, a while back, I was, you know, part of this Tai Chi class. And I love when the teacher says to do Qigong properly or Tai Chi properly. Imagine that you're at the bed of the ocean and you're effortlessly being moved and, you know, guided by the currents at the bottom of the ocean, which I found was a wonderful imagery to practice your Qigong.
Beautiful, beautiful. Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. That's also the beauty of Qigong. It's, in a way, it's very simple movements.
Yeah.
But the more you do it, the more you recognize, it's actually really profound. You just gently move open. You feel first, I'm opening up a bit my chest now. I'm opening my, that's nice. I keep doing it. But then after some months or weeks, you recognize, hey, there's a lot more happening than just moving physical body. And that's a very beautiful thing. And I think to come back about what you said about yoga in a way that you said, like we live in a society where it's a lot about hurrying and stress and friction and tension. In a way, we bring this state of mind also sometimes in our yoga practice. So what you see is that you get, it has its own benefits, don't get me wrong, but very powerful hot yoga jumping and taking your ego into it, like look how beautiful I am, and very much with force stretching and frowning your face, make your breath short. whilst it is exactly actually kind of the opposite. It's taking the ego out of this, not forcing anything. Just making some space in a kind, nice way so that you can dissolve ego. You can make the mind calm, make the mind soft and open up a bit more the heart and emotion.
That's amazing. I think this philosophy is so important. Like I said, not just the practice, but the philosophy that these practices bring into a person's life is beautiful. And they can apply it not just in their home, but in their workplace and the society and in the communities. And I wish our presidents and prime ministers practice Qigong and yoga, and how beautiful country that would be. But so these days, Mikhail, you teach people, you've got a wonderful YouTube channel, and you do retreats and stuff like that. And I'm pretty envious of the background that you have right there, which is gorgeous. But at what point did you realize, hey, you know what, this is my calling. I'd like to do this for the rest of my life. Where was that sort of moment? When did that happen?
I always had that, actually. Yeah. Somehow it's maybe also because I was raised. My father was a reverend. He spoke in the church. My mother would also be a speaker about Christianity and love and these kind of things. Mm-hmm. And somehow I always felt like, this is something that is in line with me. Maybe I chose to be raised in a family like that. But to be first finding out myself, what is this life about? What is reality? What is God? What is feeling connected with life and feeling God is part of you as you are part of God? And then sharing what you have found in a way. So there was, I can't say there was really a point when I said, I'm going to do this.
Interesting. Thanks a lot for sharing. And it seems like your parents played at least some part of a role in your wanting to share wisdom and be of service to your community in people around you. And so at some point you did your yoga training in India, right? Or at least part of it. So how did you learn about that place?
Basically, I just went looking on the internet to find a place. I was looking for, I was especially interested in how you could use yoga to heal the body. Okay. As I mentioned, I felt I could heal my own body through yoga and Qigong practice, and that worked for me. And then I thought, how can I learn more about this and put that knowledge into my life that I can share this and help others to do this. And then I found a wonderful ashram, Paramananda Yoga in Indore, with a wonderful teacher, Guruji, Dr. Omanand. And he is a wonderful teacher that lived himself in the United States for some time, an Indian doctor, where he taught philosophy and on university and these kind of things. And then staying there in the ashram and getting taught about yoga therapy and yoga. And what the good thing was there that it was not so much just about physical teachings of how to do poses or why it's good to do certain breathing practices, but it was very much about, in the end, it's all on a subtle level from the mind, from which a lot of diseases start, and where you can work best to heal yourself on a deeper level. As you are maybe familiar with that as well, that a lot of experiences that we have in life, in a way, we are ourselves responsible for them, that they happen, or that you are not healing, or that you keep having a stiff. Let's keep it very simple. You have a stiff neck.
Yeah.
Maybe you sit the whole day like this behind the computer and having tension about, worry about your work, or maybe you have a tension about something that happened in the past, it's something you're angry about. So you can stretch every day your neck and stretch and stretch, and it helps for an hour. But every time, the problem keeps coming back because on a mind level, you keep sending signals to your body to tense up. There's maybe this negative thought or this worry or this doubt or this fear, which causes on a more gross level, on a muscle level, the problem, the issue. So it's good to stretch, but on a deeper level, where does the problem come from? From that negative energy flow or negative thought or negative mindset that you have. So learn to work on that. And like that, you can go even deeper, because why did you have that bad experience? That goes even deeper, because on a soul level, there's maybe some stuck energy. But learn to cleanse on a deep level so that you, on a gross physical level, you start to open up and free yourself from suffering also.
Wonderful. So don't get caught up on what you see. Go to the root cause of what might be sort of creating that issue in the first place, whether it's something that you experienced in your childhood, which is creating those, you know, rampant thoughts that is making you tense in a certain part of your body, which I think is a good takeaway for a lot of people, that always go to the root cause and heal that, because that'll influence, everything else. But so was that your first time in India when you went to Indore?
Oh, sorry, I moved away a little bit from the subject, but that was my first time in India.
First time.
Before that, I was a long time in Asia, or in different parts, Sri Lanka and then Indonesia. But first time in India, traveling around. And I was actually, no, it was my second time.
Okay.
The first time I was in traveling around us, but more in Dharamsala in the north, in Himalaya.
North, yeah.
And I did also like a teacher training there with a nice, good teacher, but not as inspiring as the other one in India.
Oh.
So, and I went back again after that to India to do another teaching in another place, which was nice, but very much a Western way of looking at just physical stretch, not even really teaching meditation, not even really teaching pranayama. So what stuck to me most was that one in Indore, Paramana Yoga, where I felt on a deeper level experiencing the depth of energy, the depth of consciousness, the depth of all these things through very beautiful practices.
Oh,
but India is definitely a very, very beautiful place to go and learn these things. because you have to say goodbye. I come from a Western European country. Goodbye to all my values. I have to say goodbye to everything that I think is normal. Everything.
Yeah.
Say goodbye. And then, like, you come naked into a completely different culture, and then you're much more open to receive new teachings and new ways of thinking and new ways of looking at life. Because you see, life can be lived in such a different way, and it still functions in a beautiful way.
It's very true. And I think, in addition to talking about stories, we're talking a lot about philosophy also today. The importance of sort of taking away all your preconceived notions before embarking on the path of maybe mastery or even healing. For those of you who are watching or maybe listening, I'm sure a lot of our listeners know that I'm originally from Mumbai, India, but I'm based right now in Vancouver, Canada. And one thing I want to do really is to be able to go to places like Rishikesh, or maybe I also wanted to go to Nepal back in the day and spend a lot of time learning yoga, learning some Ayurveda, you know, studying Vedanta, and really rediscovering my own roots. Because, you know, just because you live in India, it doesn't mean that you're well acquainted with the elders, you know, because India over the years has become so focused on the West or on you know, modernization, so to speak, that a lot of times it's easy to forget how rich your own culture and your own heritage is. And I know for a fact that a lot of the youth in India is now rediscovering the rich heritage of yoga, Vedanta, Ayurveda, and is helping spread the word around the world also. So
beautiful,
it's great. We're living in a good time.
Definitely, definitely. And now that's the beautiful thing with internet.
Yeah.
There's a lot to say about it, but it shares such beautiful ancient knowledge. And the Indian culture has thousands of years of looking at how does the mind work and looking at how does reality work. It's so much beautiful knowledge that is now suddenly accessible for the whole world. And in a way, what you see now happening at first, it's on a superficial level.
Yep.
Like, oh yeah, yoga is good for getting strong and fit and good. But then people start to realize, it brings a lot more actually. And then you get the deeper levels of this knowledge about pranayama, about meditation, about, I think there's a beautiful transformation happening, a wave of very interesting transformation and knowledge coming from India. And it's very beautiful.
Great. So what are your thoughts on self-discipline, and what exactly is your understanding of it, and what role does it play in our awakening? Because I understand there's a spectrum, right? Like, there's a level of self-discipline that you need to have, especially if you're embarking on the path of yoga or Qigong. So what are your thoughts on that?
It's definitely very important. There has to be a kind of fine balance, though, between learning to observe and learning to discipline. So what I mean by that is, if you are just constantly trying to control yourself, your emotions, your behavior, just controlling and not also observing and watching, like, hey, why am I feeling actually that I want to do this or that? Let's say a very simple example. You really like to eat a lot of chocolate.
Okay.
So you think, no, I should not eat chocolate. I should not eat chocolate. But you keep actually wanting it. But then at maybe one point you break and you do it and you eat a lot and you eat a lot, and after you feel, shit, I did it again. I don't feel good. Why do I always do that? Okay, next time I'm never going to do it again. And again, that feeling comes up. So instead of resisting it, maybe observe. Like, as soon as you get the urge to eat chocolate, I feel now a kind of maybe a little tension here, or I feel this strong desire coming out of the root chakra around my sexual organs, or these kind of things. I feel suddenly a movement of energy. Okay, let's just see what happens. I move with it. I'm eating now the chocolate. Okay, maybe you had enough after just two pieces. Or maybe if you start scrounging and you feel like, I really don't feel good. How does it feel to not feel good? It's really not nice. Actually, you understand what I mean? Maybe you, I read this beautiful thing about how Osho once explained about smoking cigarettes, that kind of the same thing, that instead of feeling guilty as you are smoking the cigarette and then feeling you need to smoke again after 10 minutes, just make it a meditation. Very slowly roll the cigarette, make it your moment of connection with the self. Like, okay, now I'm and taking it very slow. And then after doing it maybe for some time, you start to feel, this is really stupid. I'm taking smoke in my lungs. It doesn't feel healthy. It doesn't feel nice. But because you do it with consciousness and you recognize like, I feel it's not good for me. It's not just that I think it's not good for me, but I feel. And then...
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah, you can stop doing it. Otherwise, you keep resisting an urge, but not experiencing why it's actually not good for you.
Right.
You understand a bit what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think it's really powerful, the spirit of self-inquiry and of being curious instead of just wanting to stop the habit because other people are telling you to do it, to really be present when that experience is happening, when you get that trigger. And I've been reading some books to understand from a scientific standpoint how we can sort of stop the habit. And what I've learned is there are three factors usually whenever we're in a very compelling habit. One is the trigger, which reminds us of doing that. So that could be like opening the fridge and there's a piece of chocolate right there. The second thing could be the ease. So how easy it is for you to pick that chocolate. And the third is the reward. Obviously, with any bad habit or good habit, there is a reward. And so like you sort of suggested, instead of seeing the reward as this instant gratification of the dopamine hit that we feel, maybe if we associate it with the bloated feeling or that, you know, bad feeling that we have when we want to do something, but we don't do it, that could help change the habit. But like you've mentioned, what I love is even if, you know, you can't help but do the habit, just mindfully feeling every step of the way and then realizing that maybe that's not really good for you. So
definitely,
I love
definitely.
What you brought into this.
And I think, of course, it's good to have some self-discipline, absolutely. But like you say, if you can't help yourself doing it, also not beating yourself up after, like one part of your mind says first, it's okay. You can eat the chocolate. You deserve it. You feel so bad. And then you've eaten it. And then that same mind is suddenly telling you, you're so stupid. You should eat it. And this is friction. This is duality in the mind.
Yeah.
So doing it with kindness, like, okay, I've eaten it. Watching, observing. This is like transcending the mind, right? That you start to observe the chit-chattering of the mind, that one part of your mind is guilty about what you just did, but it just said you should do it. And learning to see that game of duality, how that unfolds itself within you.
Yeah.
And then you can start to recognize like, hey, I'm actually more, I'm higher than my mind. There's a pure observing consciousness within. And another important thing I think for this is to stay kind to yourself, to stay patient with yourself, and to learn to observe. Because if you feel guilty and bad about yourself, you're much more tend to pick up again more cigarettes or booze or watch porn or whatever it is that you're addicted to. If you feel inner peace, if you feel okayness, if you feel acceptance, and if you keep on developing this wonderful quality of acceptance and inner peace, you start to feel fulfillment. And when there's fulfillment within and recognizing that you are already complete within, you don't have to fill it up with this action or that action or perform that to feel completeness. No, you are already complete and it's all good.
Right. That's such an important thing to say, because I think that duality is a trap that we can easily fall into. A lot of people that I speak with in our own Facebook group, I do these dream calls these days where I'm just doing a call for nothing in return. I'm just doing this to support our members. And I notice a lot of people hate their bodies. A lot of people hate themselves for you know, deciding to do something and not doing it, waking up at 5 o'clock and not doing it, deciding not to have chocolate, but, you know, having like binge eating a lot. And so you develop the sense of hate about yourself, which is not a very good thing to be in. So I think it's so important, like you mentioned, to be kind to yourself and realize that this is a journey. And in a journey, there's going to be twists and turns. There's going to be blocks. There's going to be obstacles, but fall in love with the process. And most importantly, fall in love with yourself, because you could have ignored this path in the first place, but yet you're here, right?
exactly. Yeah, very, very true. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's the that's the important thing. When you recognize and start to develop the ability of complete acceptance and real true love, not like I love myself, I deserve that bar of chocolate or whatever. No, in a way, loving yourself also, that you start to feel, you know what, I want to take care of my body. I want the best for myself. And I recognize that short fulfillment of little actions that are maybe not so good for me, on the long term, I want to take care on a deeper level of myself, because I love this body, myself, this creation of life that I am.
Interesting. Now, you live in a place called Sagres, right? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
So how did you find out about this place? Like, how did you end up living here? Have you been living here for a long time? Because it's obviously beautiful. And, you know, it's a place that I'm sure helps you be one with nature and align with, you know, your version of your best life. So how did you end up living here?
I was living for some time in a van.
Okay.
I was just driving around and I like surfing a lot. I used to do that a lot. And then I was driving along the coast of Portugal and going down to Morocco. And then I really enjoyed this place here. And then I went to live for some time in Indonesia, in Sri Lanka. And then I recognized, like, hey, I actually really liked that place. And then I came back and I started to live here, because, as you can see behind me, it's pretty much a peninsula in the middle of the ocean. And it's very easy to live a healthy, calm, peaceful life and to teach from here. It's also very possible.
Yeah, it's I'm sure it's wonderful to be able to conduct the retreats and teach people, you know, out on the beach in Portugal. And I've heard that the lifestyle, like in general, is very healthy as well. Like people focus a lot on having like the Mediterranean diet, so to speak, a lot of veggies, a balanced diet, and things like that.
Well, I wish I could say that, but no. What you see here, the food is not, it's pure, pure, but it's a lot about, a lot of meat, a lot of fat, fresh fish here, that's for sure. But people in general live quite healthy, but you also have a lot of obesity here with older people. So I think I hope that slowly people will start to get inspired also to take care a bit better of their diet. I can't say it's super super healthy living what a lot of people do here, but the food is pure, and a lot of people, that's a really good thing. You have a lot of people that really grow their own vegetables in their garden. And everything is nice and fresh. That is very good, for sure.
Great. I'm also very fortunate to live in a place like British Columbia here in Canada. You've got an abundance of natural forests and beaches and mountains, and I honestly feel I'm not enjoying as much as I should of it. So one thing I look forward to is maybe hosting some workshops or maybe some retreats out in a place like Squamish, where we're around nature, around the trees, and everyone's really connected and grounded and aligned with joy and happiness. So
beautiful. What do you find if you go in nature there in the forest? What do you find?
I just, firstly, on a very physiological level, when I put my feet on the ground, I just feel a sense of letting go of whatever stress or anxiety that I might be holding. But in general, I just feel very, very healed when I come back, you know, from that day, forest, or maybe in the park. I feel like a better person. And beyond words, I just want to spend more time, you know, out there. And the thing about Vancouver is that it has a long rainy season. So it rains a lot. But it has a beautiful sunshine, like a beautiful summer also. And most of the people are really waiting for the summer, which is right now. So the weather is perfect. Birds are chirping. Everyone's in a good and happy mood. And it's just a nice, you know, spirit to be in, so to speak.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. Very beautiful.
So for someone who wants to become a teacher, a yoga teacher, and be able to share asana, pranayama, what is your advice to them? Any advice at all?
Yeah. But first of all, in life, you can only give what you have. You can only share what you have, right? So what I see happening a lot now is people want to start teaching already when they have not really understood the practice very well themselves, and they try to share what they actually do not understand yet themselves. So first of all, experience, do a lot of yoga, experiment with different types of feel. This actually works for me, not because somebody tells me, you feel like this, and if you do this breathing exercise, then you feel the energy up here. No, feel it. Are you really feeling different flows of energy in the body? Are you really experiencing what is consciousness? A lot of people nowadays are teaching meditation when they have never really been in a deep state of meditation themselves, it almost seems. So are you really truly experiencing what you are teaching? So therefore, do it a lot, a lot, a lot. It's not just a course that you do in a month, or I even see now you can do online teacher training course and become a yoga teacher in a couple of hours behind the computer. Go travel maybe around or practice a lot, make it a routine in your life, that you feel the wonderful results of this practice, that you feel the profound changes and transformation it can bring in your life, and feeling right. The deeper layers of you as a human being, that you're not just flesh and bones, that you're not just electric flow of energy in the body, but you're much deeper than that also. So do it a lot, a lot, a lot, and get experience, and then you can share what you truly have and not what you want to teach.
Got it. And I'm sure this resonates with a lot of our listeners as well. By experiencing it yourself and immersing yourself in these wonderful practices and modalities, those experiences that you have will be like an anchor point for you to be able to say, wow, this really shifted my life. And I would love to share this with people, because if I don't, then that'll be a waste. So experience
exactly,
it.
Exactly. Definitely. Definitely. And then you don't have to think about what you should teach, because you have experienced it. You just speak from experience. So you don't have to think about why this and that is good, or what happens in your energy system. No, you've experienced it. You felt it. Of course, it's good to know the theory also, but that makes you a confident, good teacher. And people will feel that if it's genuine experience that somebody has, or he's just been reading it in a book or seeing it. So get to do it a lot, experience the profounder reality of your being, and then you can share that with the world. Because in the end, this is, I think, our essence as human beings, that we are all in a way connected, of course, and we want to be some meaningful to the other person. In a way, we are like a tribe on a deeper level of sharing the same consciousness, deeper spirit. And you will feel in line when you start to serve others and help others and help others become healthy and understand their own mind. But we started this conversation, you have to first shine before you can shine light and serve others. So help also yourself to purify yourself as a soul, and then start shining light.
Mm-hmm. And so I think we touched upon this a bit, but if you could give us an overview a bit about pranayama and how our breath can really influence how we feel and even our life.
Mm-hmm. Well, you notice it very easily already when you just take a couple of slow, deep breaths if you're feeling stressed or something. First of all, when you're feeling stressed, your breathing is short and it's high up. But if you just take a couple of deep breaths, already after 2 minutes of doing that, you will start to actually feel a little bit more ground. So that's just a little start, because you can do this breathing technique for 10 minutes and you feel really grounded. You can do 30 minutes of pranayama, not just deep breathing, but also super slow and calm breathing. And then you feel really, really grounded and connected, right? So on a physical level, it helps to bring the balance of carbon dioxide and oxygen in your bloodstream good, and that's very important for living healthy. It helps you to detoxify. It helps you to especially around the heart center, we can hold a lot of tension in that area. It helps to unblock that. So that all for that, it's very powerful. It really helps, but it also helps you to understand on a deeper level that you can start to calm the mind so much, you can start to tame the mind, start to slow it down, that your mind will become really still and you start to see beyond the mind, or you can start to experience that spaciousness, that stillness of pure being, of consciousness. So in that way, in pranayama, in breathing practice, there's many different types of breathing practice. In a way, some are really good on a physical level to open up, to unblock, and the other ones are really good to start to bring your mind in a meditative state. So it's great. I would advise everybody, it will transform your life in a beautiful way if you can take time every day, even if it's just 10-15 minutes to start this journey on breathing.
Wonderful. And speaking about going beyond your mind, like you've sort of suggested, in doing so, you're also able to influence or open your third eye, right? Or the pineal gland. So from your experience, what happens when you open your pineal gland or your third eye? And more importantly, how do you know that you have in fact opened your third eye?
Yeah. Well, I can say a lot of theory about this, and this will become mind. And I can say, you start to see a lot of colors. You start to get clairvoyance and all these things. Sorry to not give a clear answer to this. The thing though is that people start to then search for that, like, I want to open my third eye center because then I'm gonna have more seeing colors or the spacey experiences. The important thing is, I think, not to look for all these experiences, not to try to open your third eye or something. I have some breathing practices for that to help do that, but the most important thing is to start to get complete inner stillness and go beyond physical body, beyond opening your physical third eye, or beyond opening up the mind, or going beyond the creations of your mind, and recognizing, like, hey, with this very meditative, calm state of breathing, I'm not trying anymore to do something. I'm not looking for trippy experiences, because just being purely alive is already the greatest experience you will ever have if you can do it with full consciousness. You understand a little bit what I mean? Sorry if it's a bit of a vague answer. But the thing is to, if you start to create true inner stillness, then you recognize that all of this the mind, the thinking and the chattering and the seeing colors and the imaginations and the physical body is just a game of creation, a game of illusion, if you know what I mean. And that's why it's so important to go into the deep meditative state, which is beyond all this. Just to give you an example, a lot of times people try to find these experiences in drugs, for instance, and the mind, you take the drug, the mind creates all these creations and colors and all these things, right? It can help in a way people clear their energy pathways, maybe, or clear emotions that are stuck. I'm not saying anything. However, this is all games of on a mind level. For instance, you've probably heard of this before, that they've given, for instance, true meditators or enlightened people drugs, and they saw what would happen if they would take it. Nothing happened. Oh. Maybe something happened, but they would give LSD, and these people were not moved at all. Nothing happens. Why is that? Because on a way, these people have transcended mind. So maybe there was all these visual things, but not taking it seriously. Like, yeah, there is this trippy experience and this creations of my mind, but consciousness is something higher than that, if you know what I mean. So maybe having these physical sensations, but I'm not taking it seriously because I'm much higher than that. It's a little bit like recognizing that you are the spectator watching the screen on which all these creations of the mind can happen, but you don't identify with it. Whereas if you're completely identified with the mind, you travel off to other dimensions and all that, but it's a game of the mind. So you understand a bit what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, I think that's a very profound and almost Vedantic, perspective, where you're transcending, you're going beyond even the spiritual experiences, and you're trying to discover your true essence, like in the most purest form. So I think that's really, really useful. A quick check-in. I know you're on battery, so how good are we?
All good, all good. I've got it on an extra battery.
Awesome.
Just to give you a little bit more deeper explanation about it, as we see in the yoga practice, We have different layers of being. We have our physical body, this here. Then there's also energy flowing through the body. We have electric signals flowing through the nervous system, but on a more subtle level, prana. Mm-hmm. We have our mind. We have our intellect. That's even more subtle because you cannot measure or touch mind, but it's there. And then on a deeper level, there is this pure being, your pure consciousness. So if you are really recognizing and identified with your pure consciousness, then these outer layers, they can be all tripped up by certain drugs or breathing experience, but that essence that is not touched by that essence of pure being. So in a way, and that's what I'm trying to really teach in this course that I'm trying to teach, get connected, get identified with that source of yourself or that higher self, which is much deeper or beyond these layers of mind, body, energy, and all these things, because that will pass, that will go, but the essence stays.
Thanks a lot for sharing. And I'm sure people who are listening to this episode right now are able to comprehend in some way, because I know what you're sharing is very deep, but they're able to understand through your energy and through your intentions. They're able to grasp what you're sharing, which is to transcend and go beyond, rather than, you know, get hooked onto the illusion, the Maya, so to speak. So talk to us about your approach to dealing with challenges and obstacles that come up in life. How do you look at them? How do you sort of work through them, maybe from the yogic standpoint or the Taoist standpoint?
Well, the good thing is that the important thing to understand is that everything that happens in your life is something that you need to experience, seeing it in that way. So recognizing that if something not so nice maybe happens, that it's just an experience you need to have, or it's there because it's there. So seeing it in such a way, okay, this is something I'm experiencing now, not in a way like resisting or feeling like I'm feeling so sorry for myself that I experienced it, or life is so unfair, or I should. No, it's there because it's there. And so that you start to flow with the experience. Okay, it's there. And talking about learning to transcend a little bit, like sometimes you feel sad, sometimes you feel angry, but learning not to be in that anger or be in that sadness. But like I said before, you learn to observe like, there is a bit of anger now. There's frustration, or there is sadness. But you are up here. You're not down here. A lot of people, it's the opposite. They are under here, and life brings them a sad feeling. I feel so sad. Why? They're drowning in that river instead of floating above it or sitting on the side. So going through every experience that you have as an experience you need to have in your life to call it to grow or to evolve your consciousness. It's just there because it's life happening. So flow with it, flow with everything, flow with the bad experiences, flow with the good experiences, so that you start to ride on that wave of life as it flows.
So there you go, everyone. Flow on the way of life, as we're seeing some waves behind Mikhail in the beautiful ocean. But use that perspective, use that mindset to sort of question and rationalize. You're having those difficult emotional challenges. Am I emotional, or are these emotions that I'm experiencing? No, I'm not emotions. I might be something else. Am I these thoughts? No, I'm not these thoughts. So sort of detaching yourself step by step will, like you've alluded to, allow you to be that observer and not just be on that quest of discovering your true essence, but also in a way feeling better, because you are not your emotions, and you know that after some point they will subside. You know, you're not always going to be angry or sad or worried or frustrated. It's a phase, and just like a cycle, it's going to go up and it's going to come down as well. So
definitely,
thanks a lot.
And it's a great skill to that's what you're kind of learning also in a way of meditation. It's like creating practice for daily life, that you're able to observe these things. You're sitting and doing meditation, and you recognize like, sometimes a sad feeling comes up, and instead of, I'm so sad, I need to do something about it, go to the fridge, grab chocolate, or call my mom, just sit. I'm feeling sadness. That feeling goes away maybe after some time. Maybe it sticks, that's all right as well. But learn to observe, so that in daily life, eventually you become so good at it that you become able to be sad with a smile. Like, ah, there is that sadness. Or be angry with a smile. Like, ah, I'm a human being. I have anger running through my system. That's okay. You understand, though? So you're starting to recognize, like, hey, I'm actually something more than this fluctuating emotions, than this body that is constantly changing, than the situations that are constantly changing. I am this pure observer within.
And I think that's a beautiful sort of thought to end our session with, Action Tribe. If you love the session, then know that our main podcast is in its audio form, available on all podcasting platforms, whether it's Apple or Spotify, Stitcher, Google. Just search for My Seven Chakras and you'll see our top over 360 episodes that we've done in the past. And I hope you've enjoyed our session so far, and now you have a different perspective on life. One of the reasons why I do these podcasts is to show you and to demonstrate how special you are. You are a being of light and you are truly infinite. Wow, that rhymed. But because of the stresses of day-to-day life and the uncertainties that we sometimes have to go through, you begin to feel anxious, you begin to feel worried, and you forget about your own greatness. And you begin to feel like there's nothing special about you. But the truth is that you, my friend, are just one deep breath away from feeling better again. Like Mikhail shared, that the breathing that you do will be able to change your state. And as Antoinette Foy once put, breathe deeply until sweet air extinguishes the burn of fear in your lungs. And every breath is a beautiful refusal to become any less than infinite. And with that being said, we've come to the last round for today, which is the wisdom round, which contains four questions so that our listeners can take note and take action. And before that, I'd like to share that if you're interested in embarking on a breathwork journey that blends ancient yogic breathing with brainwave entrainment music and guided imagery, then you might like the 21-day awakening protocol program, which is part of the Soma Breath that I recently experienced and went through. Because I've received a lot of questions from people in our community about what modalities should I go for, you know, what path would you suggest? I recorded a 14-minute video about my experience with that particular practice. I did experience some mystical states during these guided meditations, including seeing a purple ball of light in my third eye, which I talk about in the video, but I can't be sure that you'll experience the same. Now, this is a free video, but after watching it, you'll be able to make an informed decision about whether this 21-day breathwork journey is for you or not. So if you're interested, go to my7chakras.com/soma. That's my seven is a word, my7chakras.com/soma. All right, so we begin with the wisdom round. Mikhail, what is the best piece of advice that you have ever received?
To stay kind. To stay kind. Yes, definitely. And it's not just to other people or something, but to stay kind to yourself also. Very important. Definitely.
And if you could turn back time and spend 1 hour with someone who's living or maybe someone who is dead, who would it be?
I would spend 1 hour with Gautama Buddha, I think.
Oh, great. And what is that one thing you do in the morning or maybe in the evening before you're going to sleep that you feel has improved the quality of your life?
I pray a bit every day. And that has improved definitely the quality of my life. And listening to brain and training music that I also create myself. You can find it on my website also. That really helps to kind of set your brain ready and harmonize it before going on the journey of sleeping. And that's very helpful as well.
And if you could recommend one book for our listeners today, what would that be?
One book, that's a good one. The Book of Life. start to learn to read every experience that you have as something to learn something from, and then you won't need a book to tell you. You will read. Life will tell you stories that you won't find in any book in every moment. So I think that's a good way of living life.
Absolutely. So there you go, Action Tribe. Learn from the experiences that you are living and the people that you meet. Learn from every interaction that you have. The Book of Life, like Mikhail mentions. And in case you want to listen to an audiobook, know that audible.com is offering all our listeners one free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial. So in case you're going for a jog, going for a walk, maybe you're waiting for somebody and you want to learn something new or maybe read a book, then you can listen to a book instead of reading a book. The link you need is my7chakras.com/freebook. my7chakras.com/freebook. You don't pay anything. Just download your audiobook. Mikhail, thank you so much for coming on our show, spending your time, even though I know your kids are at home and giving us this wisdom. Before you go, tell us one thing that you're grateful for and how can all of us find you online and learn about your courses, your retreats, as well as your YouTube channel?
What I'm very grateful for is to be able to have received all this wonderful knowledge and to share it, to do something meaningful in my life, to share this wonderful knowledge. And I'm very grateful for that. It's great if people want to embark on a journey in getting to know a little bit more about your true self and learning more about these meditations and breath work. You can look at yogalab.com, L-A-P, Yoga Lab, Life Awareness Project. And you will find a lot of different types of courses. It's my strong belief that richness is in how much you can share. So I'm sharing all these techniques. They're complete full courses for just $10. And if people cannot afford it, send me a message. You can get them for free. I hope that you can create beautiful transformation in your life and start to shine. And if everybody will start to shine, this world will be a very beautiful, bright place. So hopefully you can embark on this beautiful journey as well.
Yeah, for sure. I myself have taken his pranayama course, and I can say for a fact that it's beautiful. I really enjoy the way that you teach, the nuances that you share, and the care that you have for somebody who's, you know, viewing your video. It shows, it reflects really wonderfully well. Also make sure you check out his YouTube channel, which is Yoga Lab, and you'll see like so many, you know, videos, whether it's Qigong or meditation or yoga or all these beautiful practices. You'll find Mikhail, you know, demonstrating these videos on there. So make sure you check and subscribe to his YouTube channel as well. And we'll have the links up in the show notes just in case you'd like. And if you're on Instagram, then take a screenshot of your phone, you know, listening to this episode or maybe watching the stream, and tag me so that I can share your story with our community. My handle is @my7chakras. @7 is the word, my7chakras. Mikhail, what is your handle on Instagram?
My name, Mikhail Biker. Yeah.
Mikhail Biker.
All together. Yes.
So make sure you tag Mikhail as well, and we'll both share your story, your screenshot, with our community. So Mikhail, thank you so much for coming on our show and being vulnerable and talking about your story, your challenges, your learnings, your wisdom, and taking us one step closer to a human revolution.
Thank you for listening to My Seven Chakras at my7chakras.com. That is my, S-E-V-E-N, chakras.com.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.